Warning, this podcast contains descriptions which some listeners may find upsetting. Listener discretion is advised.
Any opinions expressed are all our own and do not in any way represent the opinions of where we work.
Hello, welcome to Mad or Bad.
My name's Rachel.
And I'm Neil.
And today we bring you the story of Cynthia Owen and the Dalkey House of Horrors.
Ireland in the 1960s and 70s was a much more poorer and less developed society than today. Dalkey, even though it's reportedly a rich area today, had and still has its pockets of deprivation and poverty. What shocks me though is how the abuses and baby deaths went unpunished. Surely the evidence that has emerged over the past 20 years has warranted action by the Gardaí and prosecutors.
So just to explain some of the terminology that we'll use today, still things that I kind of say, even though I live in England now, but basically the Gardaí or an Gardaí Síochána, that's the term that Irish people use for the police. So you'll probably hear me using terms like Gardaí or the guards, and basically that is just to explain that they are the police.
So even though the parents at the centre of the abusers are dead, many of the other abusers are still alive and at large. It seems to be that it's easier for the prosecution service in Ireland to brush this under the rug instead of coming clean. There are allegedly various members of the Gardaí, so as Rachel just said, the guards, the police, both involved in the abuse and more than likely involved in the cover-up. Although, obviously, that's open to conjecture.
Cynthia's story begins in the seaside town of Dalkey, south of Dublin, where she was born in 1961 to Josie and Peter Murphy, one of nine children living in a two-bedroom council house. Peter Murphy's own upbringing was far from ideal. He was taken into state care aged two with his two brothers and four sisters. Age 12, he was hired out to a farmer to do 18-hour days. Peter's three brothers and one sister and two more uncles were also in Irish industrial schools. Peter was a familiar figure in the local pubs and went on to become a caretaker in the town hall in Dalkey. He reportedly had several friends who were members of An Garda Síochána, the Irish police force. Cynthia describes her father as cold, uncaring, and who was aggressive both towards her mother and all of the children in the house. Cynthia describes her mother as being very cold, mentally abusive, and seemed to pick on Cynthia particularly, taunting and being verbally abusive towards her. Her mother was quite manipulative and controlling. Normally, Cynthia's mother spent the day in bed nursing her hangover. At night, she sat up drinking in the living room. The abuse only got worse when she was drunk. Both Cynthia's parents were alcoholics, and although there are mixed reports on just how poverty-stricken her upbringing was, most of the family income was spent on drink.
And we're not, I think at this point, we're not kind of, I mean, my personal view, it's any personal view, is that alcoholism is a disease, you know, so it's probably spent on drink because she needed it, isn't it? Well, it's not like a choice.
Yeah, and I've read different reports about Cynthia's mum's upbringing, and it sounds like she had a pretty tough time as well. So she had a lot of demons.
They were probably unresolved, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, definitely. You know, a lot of trauma. Yeah. So it sounds like that was just her way of coping,
that
really.
That was her way of coping, yeah.
Cynthia recalled in an interview with The Late Late Show how her earliest memories
with
of
Gay
the
Byrne?
No, not Gay.
I thought
he finished a long time ago.
No, yeah. No, but it was his show initially.
Yeah,
he just passed away, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I remember first watching
Rest
that.
Rest in peace, Gay Byrne. We love you. He's actually such a nice man.
I remember the first time I watched that. I think it used to be on the, I don't know if it's Channel 4, BBC, like in the, well, he was still presenting it. And I remember I recorded it because U2 used to be on a lot.
And they do that, what's it called? The Christmas one. Late. I don't know what they call
Who
it.
Who does it now?
Ryan Tubridy.
Yeah, I saw him when we were last in Ireland.
He was the...
I find him a bit annoying. Yeah,
he was the presenter who did this interview. It's still available on YouTube. Okay. You know, he's not bad. It's just nobody can beat Gay Byrne, though. Like, I grew up with The Late Late Show.
Yeah, he just passed away, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I am right, yeah.
Yeah. So Cynthia recalled in this interview with The Late Late Show how her earliest memories of the house were of the cold and dirt that she lived upon. They were apparently black blankets on the windows and only one light bulb working in the entire house, which was in the living room downstairs. Cynthia recalls the house being filled with terror, fear and confusion. Cynthia and her siblings were raised in a council house literally two streets away from the main road that runs through Dorky Village. It's a tiny estate called White's Villas. The family resided at number 4.
Beginning in 1968, Cynthia would have been 7 years old, until Cynthia finally married and left home in 1981. She was the victim of abuse by not only a mother and father, but by several members of the extended family and even friends of her family. One night, Cynthia's mother told her to start sleeping in the marital bed. That night, when her father came back from the pub, Cynthia claims he climbed in beside her and raped her. This continued night after night, often with her mother sleeping in a single bed in the same room. Cynthia was also raped both anally and vaginally by members of her extended family by a man known as Ken, who paid to visit and rape Cynthia with her parents' consent. When Cynthia was 10 years old, she remembers being taken by her mother at night to a building and raped by several local men who had formed a paedophile ring. Cynthia recalls being drugged by her mother before going there. Cynthia alludes in an interview that this was in a police building. The next day, Cynthia would be sent back to collect payment from these men. This would continue on the first Monday of every month, and concurrently, the abuse also continued at home. Cynthia remembers this well, as her mother would send her for the, I think in this country it used to be called the family allowance, the children's allowance.
That's
the next
what,
day.
Yeah.
That's all it is, you know.
Yeah.
She learned to dread getting the children allowance due to this.
When Cynthia was aged 11, she discovered that the butterflies in her stomach was actually her first pregnancy. Cynthia says a lot of people must have known I was pregnant, but nobody ever helped. Cynthia's mother tells her that she is pregnant and that she must keep it a secret. She continues to attend school, but attempts to conceal her growing stomach with a large coat. One day, one of her teachers, Mother Margaret, asked her if she was pregnant, however Cynthia denied it.
So she, I'm presuming, unless that, you know, she was a nun, was she, Mother Margaret?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's back in the day in Ireland, all your teachers were nuns.
Well, you said at your secondary school that...
Well, that it was like attached to a convent, so some of the teachers were nuns, most of them were just teachers. But, like, there was a heavy kind of a Catholic...
But in that school going back, though, if it was, like, so many years before...
It would, yeah, more not, yeah. Yeah, a lot of them, you know, were kind of being... Not phased out. A lot
well,
of them were
just
dying.
Older,
they were just
getting
older and dying. So, yeah, I mean, Cynthia denied this. And, again, in the research that I've done, it looks like she was either confused about being pregnant, she didn't really understand what the word pregnant meant.
Well, she's old, is she?
11.
Well, I mean, you know, it's...
Or she just knew, actually, to just not say anything. I think it's probably a combination of both. So Cynthia was then told to sit back down in class. Cynthia's waters broke one night during the Easter holidays in 1973, and she gave birth to a baby girl named Nolene. She alleges that after removing the placenta, her mother picked up the infant and stabbed her with a knitting needle, more than 40
Jesus,
times the inquest later heard.
It's absolutely horrendous, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think she did this right in front of Cynthia as well.
Jesus, yeah.
I know, it's awful. When she was certain the baby was dead, her mother put it in a laundry bag and crept out into the night, dragging Cynthia, now delirious, with her. And Cynthia's mum hid it in a lane in the nearby town of Dunleary. Two men from the paedophile ring were apparently at the house that evening, one being a member of the guards, who helped clean up the evidence.
The bag was found that night by two boys, and the Dunleary baby story was headline news. Cynthia says, I remember seeing it on television a couple of days after I'd given birth. It was on a programme similar to Crime Watch, and they were calling for the mother to come forward. I remember sitting there feeling really angry because I was tired and distressed and hurt, and I was thinking, why do I have to come forward? Why don't you just come and get me? An investigation was launched but closed 6 weeks later, and the case became another infamous unsolved murder. Baby Nolene's remains were buried in a communal grave in the Holy Angel plot, Glasnevin Cemetery.
Glasnevin, yeah. So yeah, they basically only looked into this case for 6 weeks. They didn't do any interviews or anything. My theory is that because the guards were kind of involved in the abuse as well, and some of the research
has that been proven or. Well, I mean,
it never went to trial. But, you know, according to Cynthia, members of the police force were involved in the paedophile ring, were involved in the cleanup of this. This is all according to her.
And it does make you wonder that, I'm not sure how long a murder investigation goes on for. I mean, 6 weeks doesn't sound that long at all, does it?
To find a baby that would have had
multiple.
To me, it just sounds like they just closed it as soon as possible, really. But, well, it's all allegedly, isn't it?
It certainly doesn't seem long, does it, to find a newborn baby with, what was it, 40?
40 stab
kind
wounds.
Kind of stab wounds. I know it's kind of knitting needles, but a baby's any small, and 40 of them marks. It sounds.
It's just grotesque, isn't it? The following years were a nightmare for Cynthia, and the abuse continued. According to Cynthia, she got pregnant again at age 15 and gave birth prematurely to a stillborn baby, whom she named John. According to Cynthia, her family buried baby John's remains in the back garden. She began drinking heavily.
It's no wonder, is it?
No, I know. Cynthia said, "My mother was evil. I also think she was mentally ill. She would pit all of us children against each other and single some out as her favourites. And she decided that I was the baddest of all. I think it's because I used to question why she had 60 cigarettes a day, while we went without socks and toothbrushes. Also, I was the only child that looked like her. I had her red hair and green eyes, while all the other children were dark. I don't know if that was some kind of trigger."
It wasn't until her early 20s that Cynthia finally managed to escape by boarding a ferry to England. The turning point came 2 years later when she met Simon, the man she is married to today. She says, "If it hadn't been for him, I wouldn't be where I am now. Everything is because of him. He made me feel safe, and the more secure I became, the less I stopped running away from it all." By now, Cynthia was suffering from post-traumatic stress, nightmares and flashbacks, which is not surprising, is it? No. On the anniversary of her baby's death, everything would come rushing back, and it seemed to be getting worse as time went on. "I suffered really badly from survivor's guilt. I never got to hold my daughter. I never got to name her. And I didn't get to bury her. I didn't even know where she was. That was a big thing. I wanted to find out and make peace with her. I was tortured by it."
It's awful though. It's like she never got any closure from it.
No.
At that age, I mean, you just can't even. I can't even imagine being that age and being pregnant.
No.
And trying to make sense of that when no one's really talking about it either, so no one's really explaining what's happening.
I mean, there was.
So
it was when she was 11 and then 15 again, wasn't it? It was two. So in 1990, Cynthia decided to begin counselling to address her trauma and the high levels of anxiety she was experiencing as a result. Cynthia was visited by her niece, Teresa, in 1991.
Can I just say here, Teresa? So the family unit's a bit confusing because Teresa is basically the daughter of Cynthia's sister. But Teresa was brought up in the house thinking actually that that they were all siblings.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So presumably Cynthia's sister is older, yeah.
I think her name's Margaret. She was, a little bit older, but got pregnant really young.
Yeah, got it.
So they're all really close. In the sense of they all, you know, they lived together for years and years and years. They're all like sisters.
Yeah. So, as we kind of just said, Teresa was a child of Cynthia's older sister, Margaret, but was raised within the family home as another of Cynthia's siblings. At the visit, Teresa tells her that her and her brother Peter were also abused in the family home.
In April of 1995, Cynthia's brother dies of suicide at Four Whites Villas, which is the home where they all grew up. Simon tried to persuade her to go to the police.
Simon, Cynthia's husband, isn't he?
Yeah.
Her partner.
Yeah. Because obviously, there, all this stuff is coming up now, isn't it, years later, when they're all adults. And clearly Cynthia's brother, you know, was experiencing something in his own life. So finally, one night in April 1995, she picked up the phone and dialed the Dunleary police station to say that she was the mother of the unidentified baby found 22 years before. Cynthia quotes, "The moment I did that, I lost what was left of my family. It ripped our family apart. I've had to raise my son with no family history, nothing behind him. It was like I woke up one day and I was an orphan." In February 2005, Cynthia's brother Michael's remains are found. So this is another brother.
Oh, so two of brothers.
Two brothers have killed themselves by suicide. It seems he dies by suicide. However, it's not officially confirmed. Teresa, Cynthia's niece, whom she grew up with in the family home, is found dead, having killed herself as well. Oh, so three suicides. Okay. She leaves a 37 document detailing the abuse she and her other siblings experience in the family home by Josie and Peter Murphy, as well as the brother Peter.
Oh, so...
So I think Peter was abused, but then he also was part of the abuse.
And then he took his own life.
No, he isn't one of the... That's a different... But there's so many of them. There's ten siblings.
Sorry, yeah.
But it's not him. He is still alive to this day. So in the letter, Teresa describes the quiet howls of terror and whines of fear, all muffled behind blankets nailed to the windows of this house of horrors.
It sounds awful, doesn't it?
The letter details a litany of evil abuse, humiliation and degradation, and confirms the gross deeds that took place at White's Villas. It describes the appalling abuse she endured with her brother Michael. It describes the smell of urine and feces. It describes things that should never be believed. It was simply too sickening for words. Attached to Teresa Murphy's suicide note was an extra page. This page names the two family members who abused and raped her. Teresa supported her sister Cynthia's story of murder and abuse. She was increasingly convinced that Gardaí and some local people had covered up this abuse. As a young child, she kept all the secrets of the sins of her family. The fact that Cynthia's mother, in an effort to conceal the crime of incest, stabbed her newly born grandchild 40 times with a knitting needle in front of her. The fact that the second child delivered stillborn to Cynthia was buried in the garden. The fact that Josie Murphy forced her daughters to go to the father's bed to be raped. The finding of her brother Michael's body at Killiney Dart Station was the last straw for Teresa. In a desperate effort to find some information about him, she was forced to ring her parents' house and heard her father's voice taunting her. She had not heard his voice for years, and it triggered memories of those years of sexual abuse at his hands. Those same mocking laughs brought back all of her pain, and she could take no more. The past haunted Teresa every day and every night of her life. And then she killed herself.
And so began a 15-year fight to bring about some sort of justice. Cynthia was desperate to be officially recognised as the mother of a baby so that she could name her and perhaps find some peace of mind. In 2005, she succeeded in getting an inquest open, which unanimously concluded that the baby was indeed hers. Cynthia says, "When they made the announcement, I just broke down and I sobbed and sobbed and sobbed." Cynthia named the baby Nolene. She also persuaded the police to show her where they had buried her body. She said, "I got very upset when I finally saw the grave because it was just a piece of barren ground with nothing to mark it. But at the same time, it was as if the weight of 100 years had lifted off me. I'd finally found her. I was upset, obviously, but the most dominant feeling I had was, I've done it, I've found her. I put some flowers down and said to her, 'Don't worry, I'm going to get them.' And I went back to the police car, stumbling and crying, and I opened the door and I said, 'Take me to see those bastards, I'm ready for them now.'"
Oh, that just gives me chills, though.
Yeah.
That's so sad. So Cynthia attempted to bring the case against her parents to the prosecuting authorities 7 times, but each time it came back citing lack of evidence. The story was very closely followed by the Irish press, and Cynthia's family home became dubbed the Dawkey House of Horrors. Around the time of the inquest, both of her parents died in quick succession. Cynthia says, "I wouldn't say that they died before I got justice. Because I think if they ever have lived for another 10 years, I still wouldn't have got justice."
Mm.
They died free. They got away with it.
I guess after seven seven times, I can understand why she would think that.
Yeah, because, and I mean, to this day, you know, as we'll discuss, she still hasn't gotten justice. Yeah. It's, you know, it's really sad. So Cynthia alleged that she was prostituted by her parents to a group of local men, including three local Gardaí, in the 1970s. In January of 2016, she posted on her Facebook page photographs of the surviving men alleged by her to have been involved in the abuse. This has since been taken down. I think there might have been some kind of illegal
thing. I would have thought so, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they were up and people saw them, so I presume people know the names out there. They're just not published massively. There's a couple of names that are published, however.
Are we able to...
I mean, it's allegedly. It's all in newspapers and stuff, you know. So one of the photographs included former Gardaí Frank Mullen. Frank Mullen, a founder of the Gardaí Representative Association, has denied all allegations that he was or still is part of a paedophile ring. Cynthia's brother was another person whose picture was there, Peter, and she has alleged repeated rape by him in the family home in the 1970s. And he's also, you know, really strongly denied any of these allegations and went as far to say that Cynthia's allegations are, in quotes, absolutely and totally made up lies and that they were, quote, totally incorrect. He described the family home in Dalkey as, quote, happy, and said he was, quote, close friends with Cynthia as a child growing up. He said his sister had a turbulent relationship with their mother. In quotes, I know Cindy always loved my mother and my mother always loved Cindy.
Asked how she managed to survive all this, Cynthia says it's a combination of meeting her husband Simon, years of therapy and a belief in God. She said, not the Catholic God I was brought up with. That is not a very forgiving faith. I believe in the God that is full of love and compassion and who doesn't believe in negativity. Cynthia is now 48 and has been signed off work for the rest of her life. She lives in a small cul-de-sac in the UK. The neighbours are all elderly. While Cynthia will wave to them in the street, she's chosen not to befriend them. She said, we chose to take a step back. It's the anonymity they crave. My son had to grow up with a mother who has been crippled with depression and trauma. He's seen me crying, upset and distressed. He suffered a lot. She said, I ask myself every day, why am I still sane? Why haven't I turned to alcohol or drugs? How come I'm still here? But I am. I'm not completely crushed. I wouldn't ever allow them to do that to me.
It's quite impressive though, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It shows you what people can...
Yeah, the capability of people to... I think some of that must be down to moving away and trying to build some form of a life.
Well, like she said,
in a different place. And having that support there as well. Yeah. It sounds like
it sounds like he's...
You know, very supportive. He was the one, in fact, that, you know, persuaded her to go to the police.
Well, good for him, I mean...
And try and, you know... Try and get something done with the police.
I guess, like she said, though, didn't she? It's kind of a combination, isn't it? It's the moving away, and then it was only, was it 2 years she met Simon?
Yeah. Yeah, I think she initially met somebody in Ireland and they moved away to the UK.
Oh, they moved over together?
I think so, right. Yeah. Not Simon, a different
guy. No. He's English, he's British.
But then she found him, yeah. And I guess the saddest and most horrifying thing is that actually, the story doesn't end here at all. Cynthia's son, Patrick Nevin, went on to sexually attack his friend's mother and beat her unconscious.
Oh, what the
hell? He was then convicted of oral rape and sexual assault, but served only a short time in a Danish jail because of his age.
And how old he was at the time, then? Well, presuming,
I don't know.
I don't know about Danish kind of law.
No. On his release, he actually returned back to Ireland, and in 2001, he was jailed for 7 years... for a brutal assault on his then partner, during which he threatened to kill her and beat her two pet dogs to death with a banister rail. There's something about the minute you mention animals, I just can't cope.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Ugh, fucking hell. So initially he pleaded not guilty, but then admitted to that offence, but then admitted to raping a woman in County Meath on July the 12th, 2014.
Yeah.
So this went on and on. He further admitted sexually assaulting a second woman at an unknown location in County Meath on July the 16th, 2014. So this all went to trial, and he was found guilty of sexually assaulting a Brazilian student at the UCD campus at Belfield on July the 23rd, 2014.
Wow. He's still over there. He's in Ireland. Well, we don't know.
That is just...
So I guess, did him kind of witnessing his mum, you know, the trauma that his mum... I mean, I don't know how exposed he was to...
No, sorry, there's no excuse for that.
No, I'm not. No. No, absolutely, there's no excuse.
I just feel really bad for Cynthia, because it's like, Jesus Christ, you literally move country to escape all of that crap.
Yeah.
She never truly escapes it, but then, you know, goes on to just try and live a normal life, and then her son ends up being
kind of
person that she's trying to escape to begin with.
There's no...
And I mean, she has publicly come out and said, like, I do not support him in any way.
Absolutely.
And you know, he disgusts me, kind of a thing.
I just wonder, though, and I'm not trying, this is not trying to make an excuse, but I'll just wonder if, kind of genetically, there's anything there with the son and, you know, the nature and nurture thing, and so genetically, or maybe, you know, so it could be a combination of that. I mean, it's a whole.
It's an interesting idea. I'm not convinced.
Well, I don't know. Is he just a bad boy?
He sounds like a piece of shit, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, with that behaviour, yeah, definitely. This has been a really difficult case to research. Cynthia is a true survivor and has fought long and hard to bring her abusers, whether deceased or not, to justice. The Department of Public Prosecutions in Ireland, so the equivalent of the CPS
in the UK,
seem adamant that they want to brush this under the carpet and not open a can of worms because it's probably much easier for them. And God knows they're probably in themselves guilty of covering up the horrendous abuse that took part at Four White's villas.
Allegedly, we have to say.
Yeah, it's all allegedly, of course, and it's just our opinion on what we, you know, what we've read.
I think what's even more devastating is that Cynthia has never really escaped the abuse, as we've said.
Yeah.
You know, her son went on to become a rapist himself, and I've just never heard such a story, to be honest. Mm. I watched an interview with Cynthia on The Late Late Show, as I mentioned.
Was gay? Already retired?
No, not gay. And what really touched me was how you could tell that she was trying to be so brave, kind of putting up this front, but telling her story.
Mm.
But there were just some details that he asked her that, like, she just said, look, I'm really sorry, but I can't speak about that. Mm. You know, it's too much. She couldn't possibly bring herself to describe, really, the actual incidents of abuse. She did write a book detailing her abuse in an effort to bring that light to subject. And, you know, despite not being able to get the justice she deserves, I guess her book is the way of getting her story across.
Yeah, it's in print, isn't it?
Having her own control over things, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So the book is called Living with Evil, and it really is a must read. However difficult it is to read of the events that took place, I think it's really important to understand, you know, her experience and many other people's experiences, really. You know,
it's absolutely
horrifying. And
absolute amount. I mean, so it's been, it's been quite a difficult case to research and read about and probably listen to as well. But we thought that it was, you know, it needed to be...
it needs to be heard.
Yeah. I mean, me and Rachel both listen to a lot of... I mean, there's thousands of true crime podcasts now, isn't there? Obviously, we don't listen to them all. But
there was something particularly difficult about
I've not heard anyone...
I think for me, it's because I'm pregnant myself and I was reading about these deaths of babies and I just can't even explain like how my body felt. Like I was getting chills. I was feeling almost physically sick, like reading about how, you know, they buried this stillborn baby and stabbed this baby to death. I just like...
Yeah, it's... you can't imagine.
You know, it is really... It's difficult to hear.
So
I just feel really sorry for her, really. But
but
I don't think she wants people to feel sorry. I think she just wants to put light on the subject and
which
have
she's
control
doing,
over
she?
Things herself. So in a way, you know.
And the main thing that she's, you know, she's here and still fighting, isn't she?
Yeah.
And I don't know if she kind of, she might not think this, I don't know if she might, but she's obviously an incredibly strong person, isn't she? I mean, God knows, are any of us, God knows if
I just don't even know how you
things that
you
happened
even...
to me, I just don't know how you carry on, but she has. No. And then like we said with the much later thing about a son.
I know. What a piece of shit. But and from his point of view, like, knowing that that's what his mum has been through, and then he goes on to, like, sexually assault and rape people. I mean, what the actual fuck is wrong with people? That is sick.
Yeah, well, like, yeah.
That is fucking sick.
You just can't quite imagine. So thanks a lot for taking the time to listen to Mad or Bad.
As always, you can find us on facebook.com/madorbad. You can find us on Twitter at madorbadthepod. And please do subscribe, like, share, listen. It really helps us.
Tell your friends.
Yeah, word of mouth. Okay, we'll see you next week.